This is Alex DiPersio.
And Kashif Flory, and we're mechanical engineering majors.
And also traffic directors on campus.
And you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit KUCI.org or KUCITalk.org.
And good morning and welcome to this July 10th, 2019 edition of Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We are broadcasting to you live from the University of California campus in Irvine. We're streaming on the web at KUCI.org. We are always available via podcast. You can find us on iTunes. We're under Writers on Writing. You can follow us on Facebook, also Writers on Writing, KUCI FM. Barbara DeMarco Barrett's website is penonfire.com. She's got past shows, a list of upcoming shows up on there. She's also got information on the Pen on Fire speaker series, which is coming up next Tuesday. Poet Kim Dower is going to be there, and you can find out more information about times, location, tickets. They are all up there. My website is Marie Stone, MarrieStone.com, and not uncoincidentally, I'm your host, Marie Stone. I'm doing what we do each and every Wednesday morning, which is chat with authors about their books, about their process, about their craft. Summer has finally arrived, and if you're looking for some literary reads this summer, in addition to our always wonderfully insightful conversations with writers about craft, you've come to the right spot to find a few great books this morning to take with you on vacation. I'm here now with Kate Dolan Leach. Kate Dolan Leach was born in the Finger Lakes and is a graduate of Trinity College in Dublin and the American University in Paris. She's a literary translator and the author of Dead Letters. She was on the show with me back in 2017. You can find a copy of that podcast up on my website or in our archives. I realized last night that I accidentally misfiled it under L for Leach instead of D for Dolan. I'm going to go get that fixed. But anyway, if you go up there and you can't find it, look under L until I get there in the next day or two. Her latest novel is We Went to the Woods. It's published by Random House. It will drive our discussion this morning. Kate, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me. I love this program, so I'm delighted to be back.
Oh, thanks so much. Well, I love it too.
Yeah.
And I love you. So we're back together. So yeah. You've been far more productive in the past 2 years than I've been. So congratulations on it.
I doubt that, but thank you.
Congratulations. So this one must have been in the works when we talked last time. I mean, it almost would have had to have been. Is that, yeah?
I mean, it was barely, but yes. I had definitely started to write at least the first couple of chapters, but it kind of came into life pretty quickly. So, yeah.
And I read somewhere that you had started writing this sort of pre-election, and perhaps some of the ensuing events may have impacted the way the novel may have come out.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, there were definitely a few chapters, and I had this idea of the characters and the rough notion of what they were going to do. But I wasn't very far into it when 2016 happened, and I kind of just had to stop. Yeah. and rethink a lot of how I felt about the characters. I was treating it much more satirically in those sort of early days. And after the elections, I found that I just really sympathized with the characters a lot more. And even though they are still very naive, idealistic, incredibly flawed, I felt like I had a lot of patience for what they wanted to do and what they were attempting. So I took a pretty long break and came back to it with sort of the fresh eyes of confusion and heartbreak, really.
Yeah, right. So I'm going to let you set the stage. For those who haven't picked up We Went to the Woods yet, you know, probably makes sense to take us into Mac's world and, you know, kind of lay the foundation so we all know what we're talking about here.
Sure. So the story is narrated by Mac, who is a disgraced grad school dropout. She's moved back to her hometown of Ithaca in the Finger Lakes of upstate New York, and is just trying to scrape out a living and reconstruct her life when she meets a group of four other sort of like-minded individuals, and she sort of immediately becomes infatuated with them. with the way that they speak and with their ideas about really trying to remake the world. So when one of them, who is sort of independently wealthy, suggests that they go off-grid and try to kind of remake society in a little farm out in the middle of nowhere, she jumps on board maybe a little too quickly, and they all withdraw from the world, mostly, and go off and try and remake the world according to their sort of intense and slightly radical visions of perfection. Yeah. So the book takes place on a homestead out in the woods where, you know, things don't go exactly as the characters have planned.
And where did it start for you, like pre-2016, where did it start for you? Was it with Mac, or was it this idea of living off the grid, or kind of what was the point of origin for you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, growing up where I did in a pretty rural community with strong agricultural ties and a very wide political spectrum, all my life I heard people talk about kind of withdrawing from the world, and there's this sort of ongoing fantasy of being able to just kind of go off grid and live how you want to live independently on your own. And that's like a very strong American tradition. We've been kind of trying to do this, I feel like, almost from the very beginning of our myth of America. So I grew up with those ideas, and it was certainly something that I talked over with my closest friends of, you know, sort of young, energized teenagers and early 20-somethings. So that was always a part of our conversation, and I think as I started to formulate a story around it, Mac became this difficult but compelling narrator who was trying to get to the bottom of a story that she knew was there. So I think the idea of the off-grid lifestyle was always there, and Mac was the person who could kind of drive the story forward.
Right, right. I always think it's interesting that writers so often return to their childhood homes as fertile mm-hmm. ground for what they write about.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think you did this a little bit in your first novel as well. And, you know, just, I mean, of course we tend to write what we know, but I think there's something more to it. I think there's, I don't know, whatever that visceral thing is about childhood that pulls writers back all the time. And, you know, I don't know if as you're looking towards book 3 and 4, or, you know, maybe you have a couple in the drawer, so they're actually book 5 and 6. I don't know. but if you continue to find yourself drawn to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely true. Certainly in my case, I find that I'm sort of still imaginatively rooted in my childhood home, even though I moved away when I was 17 and have only lived back there in sort of drips and drabs over the past, you know, decade and a half. I think, you know, childhood is the very first place that we learn about stories, and we learn how to listen to them and then eventually how to tell them. So I think it's a very natural thing to want to go back to that site, because there's something just like the whole genesis of your imagination sort of takes place in this early space. So for me, I think definitely at least the next book or two will probably be situated in that sort of ground for me. Even though I love the idea of writing about some of the other places I've lived, you know, Dublin, obviously, France, I've lived in South Africa. There's lots of opportunities to write about other places for me, but there seems to be a real imaginative connection to the Finger Lakes and to my sort of home ground.
It's such a compelling area. I mean, you know, as you say, mm-hmm. there's a lot of the American dream and a lot of mm-hmm. the width of the political spectrum. And
yes.
I would imagine a lot of very interesting characters.
Yes, there are some very colorful characters. And like you said, the sort of array of the political spectrum and the sort of socionomic spectrum. You know, it's a site of an Ivy League school. So you sort of have the fanciest of the fanciest who come from all over the globe to be in Ithaca. But then it's also a rural farming community. So there's a little bit of everything, and throw in the wine and the kind of in crazy natural beauty. I think I feel like it's underrepresented in fiction for the sort of, what it can bring to storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly could spend the entirety of the rest of your career there and, you know, still have more material to mine. And isn't that a nice problem to have for a writer? Yeah,
right? It is. It's comforting. I mean, you know, personally, I felt like I couldn't stay there. And I still sort of feel that I can't really live there. It's too close. It's too insulated. It's, you know, I know it so well. But it's very comforting to feel like I can keep having a story situated there. That's a universe that I'm still very invested in.
Right. So when we talked the last time, we were talking about when you started Dead Letters, you were saying that you kind of wrote, I forget how many pages, but a lot of pages in this sort of trance-like state that you heard these characters talking. They had a lot to say to each other, and you just kind of stood back and let them go. And I was wondering if any of this was like that, and, you know, if we can talk about sort of giving yourself the mental space to access that trance-like space to kind of, you know, get out of your own way and let the characters speak.
Yeah, honestly, I wish writing this book had been a little bit more like writing Dead Letters was. That really did kind of generate it itself. We Went to the Woods was definitely more complicated because of partly what I mentioned earlier, the election and my changing sense of the political climate and my changing feelings about the characters. But I think it was also just, you know, there's a larger cast of characters here. And frankly, my narrator was really squirrely. Mac was not very forthcoming, certainly in the first draft or two of We Went to the Woods. She kept telling me the wrong story. She kept trying to mislead me. I couldn't figure out why she was back home disgraced. She, like, fed me several false stories before I figured out exactly what was going on with her. So there was definitely a sense that Mac was in my way for this story. And that really changed my relationship with the characters and with the book, but it meant that I had to go more slowly and had to really think about things a little bit more carefully, which I don't think is the worst thing for me as a writer. So it was a little different.
That's so funny you should say that, because it's very interesting for me to hear that the writing experience is so parallel tracks the reader experience, and that all of your struggles with Mac translated to, you know, I mean, you could kind of feel that as the reader, right? That she, she was squirrely and she didn't want to tell you her story. Yep. And she was very evasive.
And she avoids things. And then, you know, she often, like, fundamentally gets things wrong. I think, you know, without giving away any endings, she's just not paying attention to the right thing.
Right.
And she wants to go in the wrong direction so many times. And she's kind of convinced that she's found the real story, only to find out that she just really wasn't. She was just blinkered and wasn't paying attention. So I think writing alongside of her, there was a lot of that, realizing that we'd kind of gone down a little hole, and I'd sort of be frustrated with Mac and say, come on, girl, like, what are you doing? Like, we need to get to the end of this. Like, you're not helping.
Yeah.
So it was definitely a more contentious relationship, I think.
So tell me what that looks like as you're writing it. Like, it must look like writing down rabbit holes, and then you get to the end and you're like, this isn't it. And then do you just start over? Do you scrap it and go back to page one? Or do you kind of use some of the nuggets along the way to guide you down the next path? Or tell me a little bit about physically for you, what it looked like to mine her character and when you knew that you got it right.
Yeah, sometimes it means scrapping it. There's definitely a good 60,000 words more of this novel that exists in, you know, files and laptops and various other places that just, you know, weren't right, were the wrong story, were her focusing on the wrong thing. I had a whole other section of her sort of almost after the events of what takes place in the central narrative. It was definitely a question of having to just delete those things. Mm-hmm. And go back to sort of the fork in the road where I thought maybe she had started to head off in the wrong direction. I tend to like to write through a full draft and then not look at it for a little while, mm-hmm. and then go back from the beginning and kind of go through again from start to finish. And I did that. I've actually lost count with how many times I did it with this book. I'd say at least 5 times. So that was, you know, it's definitely a long way of doing revisions, but it, think for continuity's sake, it's hard to pick up in the middle and try and pull together threads because there's always, you know, something that happened earlier that sort of got you to that place. So thankfully, I tend to write quite quickly and work quite quickly, so that's a feasible thing for me to do. If it took me a year to work through every draft, I wouldn't be able to sustain that style of revision, but so far, so good.
I was going to say, so far, very good. But I was going to say, what does that look like in terms of writing quickly? Do you sit down and do you write this longhand to give yourself sort of more, you know, a lot of writers tell me that writing it in pen, paper, and, you know, ink gives them a little bit more mental freedom than sitting down at a computer screen? Or do you give yourself like a word count a day or something like that that kind of keeps you on track?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even sure I remember how to write with pen and ink. I think I'm of the generation where we were typing as we learned how to write, more or less.
Uh-huh.
For me, it's actually quite strange and alienating for me to see my own handwriting and have to sort of physically write. I've tried it, and when I didn't have any internet or a laptop, and it was very odd for me. So I always write on my laptop, where I feel very at home. And I try, my daily goal is between 2,000 and 3,000 words.
Nice. This explains everything. Okay, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, when it works, it works. And then there are certainly days where I sit down and there's nothing, and I realize that I could sit there for 3 hours and probably not have anything to show for it. So on those days, I kind of try to do research or move on or just look at revisions that I can do without writing. But on the good writing days, I like to just sit and sort of be intensely there with my, you know, Microsoft Word for 2 or 3 hours while I just kind of churn out the words.
Right, right. My guest this morning is Kate Dolan Leach. You are listening to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and we were talking about We Went to the Woods. This might be a good time. I just wanted to spend some time on beginnings because beginnings are hard, and they have to do a lot of work. and you can't just, you know, open a book willy-nilly and have it carry the day. And this beginning struck me for a lot of reasons. So I'm first going to have you read it. Just read that first paragraph to us, and then we're going to talk about it.
Sure. Sounds great. Okay. I'm the wrong one to tell our story. I was the late arrival, the last on board, the self-effacing supplement to the lopsided structure of which Louisa and Beau were the main architects. If only it were Beau telling our tale, drawling his way through it, cigarillo dangling from his lips. Or Louisa, nattering on with her breakneck fluency. Best of all, maybe, Jack, with his sculpted insights, frank amazement, arms carving out a circumference of joy. Chloe could convince anyone that we were beautiful and right and noble to do what we did. Instead, of the five of us, I am the only one left. I was the least important, the watchful cipher who served only as an audience and an extra body, an afterthought. Maybe Beau knew that he would need someone outside their tight quadrilateral to record and capture them, to witness, an extra point to make a pentagon. After all, he was the only one who knew the ending of the story we all thought we were writing together.
So great. So great. That was Kate Dolan Leach reading from the introduction of We Went to the Woods. You know, the thing about beginnings is that they really have to carry in them the weight of the rest of the story. And what this did is it's a big cast of characters. I mean, there's, you know, these five people go out to the woods, and it introduces all of them with sort of the key points enough to hold these people in your head just a little bit, as well as, you know, it frames the story. It tells who this person is. I mean, it does so many things in, you know, a quarter of a page. So if you can go ahead.
I'm so glad you feel that way.
Yeah. I mean, it's really incredible. I assume the first paragraph is not the first paragraph you wrote, because it feels like one of those paragraphs that would have to come pretty much after the book was already written.
It's actually weird you say that. It is the first paragraph that I wrote.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
It is. And it was definitely, I mean, just sort of the beginning of the story. I kind of just needed to have a sense of where it was going. It is, of course, not the first draft of this paragraph.
Sure. Yeah.
The first three pages are probably the most worked three pages of the whole book. They get the most time and attention. They have to go back. You know, I have to go back so many times to make sure that every little detail is exactly right. So I've probably spent way more time just on this little introductory section than entire chapters of the rest of the book. But the idea of wanting to begin it here was important to me. It's sort of a tip of the hat to The Secret History, which was definitely one of the books that was really important to me as I was writing this, that sort of early introductory setting of the stage where you get some of the characters and you get a sense that something really bad is going to happen, and what you're reading for is, how and why it happens, not necessarily whether it happens.
Right.
Obviously, no one can ever compete with, you know, Bunny had been dead for a week, that sort of opening sentence of The Secret History. But that was, I think, something that I was thinking about working on these opening pages.
It's so funny because, like, a month ago, my daughter she's 18, and I kept saying, you have to read The Secret History. You're going to love The Secret History. And so she did read it just, like, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And then I picked up this book right after that, and I was like, oh, my gosh. And this obviously has been compared many times to that. It's very fun. But, so, and in addition to that, it's got a couple of quotes at the very beginning by Thoreau and an homage to Thoreau. Now, at what point, because I'm trying to set the stage for novelists who feel very overwhelmed by writing, you know, 300 or 400 pages, and a way for them to sort of settle down and frame things for themselves to kind of rein themselves in, you know, so that they don't feel overwhelmed. And quotes, I think, are another great way that you can do that for yourself, even if they fall away and you don't use them in the end, but to kind of wrap your mind around what the aboutness of the book is. And so to that end, I was kind of also wondering at what point these quotes started to guide you, or if once the book was done, you said, here, these fit in really well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think it's always a good idea to have a better, more experienced, you know, more genius writer who you can sort of look to as a reminder of what you're trying to do with the book. Certainly Thoreau was there from the very beginning for me. Though the title wasn't there and this particular exact quote wasn't there, I was thinking about Walden pretty much from the beginning. And so every time I was worried about a thematic question, you know, I could sort of reposition myself and my characters with an eye towards that book. I found that helpful with Dead Letters as well. I was using Edgar Allan Poe in a very similar way, and sort of classic detective fiction as a way to anchor, you know, some of the complications of the book and the structure of the book. And then for We Went to the Woods, these other two quotes came in quite a bit later after I figured out, I guess, what the punchline of the book was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And having other writers, particularly a really American writer like Philip Roth, sort of centering it, this is the last line of American Pastoral, and that sort of question of just what is wrong with the way that we live, which is, again, another central question of We Went to the Woods.
Right.
And so I could return to that once I had it sort of pinned there in the front. But again, the last two, the Robert Louis Stevenson quote and the Philip Roth quote at the beginning of the book, were not things that I was necessarily thinking about. It was the Walden and the Thoreau that anchored me.
Yeah. I really like the idea of having those anchors, and, you know, Poe and Walden are really good anchors. you're going to choose some strong anchors.
Yeah, I mean, you could have picked someone very classic and time-tested, that you know people are still engaged with the work, even though people are very frequently critical, particularly of Thoreau. He's definitely fallen out of vogue many times, but we still return to him for various reasons, and he's still such an important piece of American writing.
Right.
Every high school student has had to read a little bit of Thoreau, and I think that's present for my characters and hopefully present for the readers as well.
Right. I also want to talk about research and you know, I don't know. It sounds like homesteading and farming and all that kind of stuff wasn't totally foreign to you. It was an idea that you batted around. But even batting around the idea as a teenager versus, you know, down in the earth doing it is very different. And so tell me a little bit about your research process and maybe some of the difficulties, you know, that like the hardest parts of the research process where you might have gotten bound up.
Yeah, absolutely. So even though I did grow up rurally, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, we weren't farmers, we weren't gardeners. You know, we might have planted a couple of tomato plants. But I'm lucky enough, I'm lucky enough to have neighbors, who are much more talented and good at this. And I belonged to a CSA and those were both like two indispensable ways to get a feel for what it looks like when people successfully farm. You know, I planted a garden in the hopes that I would be able to get a better understanding of exactly when the zucchini blossoms happen, all of that. Except that I'm not a good gardener. I spend a lot of time traveling, and the thing about gardening is you have to be there to weed and check on the seeds and water things. So my garden was not a total flop, but was certainly not as informative as I was hoping it would be, except for informing me that this was a lot harder than it looked. And I relied on visiting other people's much nicer and more successful gardens to get a sense of what they had done right and what I had done wrong. And again, those questions of when things bloom and when they come up and what happens if it's too wet one year, you know, which plants are less likely to thrive. So those were all questions that I needed the characters to have at least some understanding of, because even though they're not the best farmers, they do manage to make it through, you know, a few seasons at least.
Right.
So I needed them to be a little more proficient than I myself am. And, you know, that also involved me testing out various ways of making sauerkraut and trying recipes, what you can cook over an open flame and what you cannot. You know, I tried to make a batch of cheese that did not go well. I made several batches of bread that also didn't go fantastically well. So I think my failures were as informative as the occasional success that I had. And it certainly was just a lot of fun, to research and, also very time consuming. So a good reminder that this is not, you know, homesteading is not something you can do after you've been working, you know, your 50-hour week and trying to raise children or something. It's a full-time job.
And just the, you know, the psychological effects on, you know, really, novels are about the interior lives of the characters and the psychological mm-hmm. pressures that they're under. And so duplicating that is really difficult. And I don't know if you have any, I know we're drawing down on our time, but I don't know if you have any sort of insights into how to access the psychology of these people alongside doing this, you know, incredibly hard work alongside of these, you know, sexual complications and jealousies. And I think I've asked way too big of a question for the amount of time we have. But
okay, well, I'll try to keep it brief and say that, like, honestly, I really don't know. A lot of it is just pure speculation. You kind of set up the characters and everything after that is an exercise in imagination of how it would play out, you know, imagining people you know in the same situations, but also imagining yourself and the different ways that you might react in a different mood or in different circumstances. So it's really, I mean, this was almost a thought experiment of what would happen if that. And I think the psychological stuff was really the answer and the sort of core of that.
Yeah. Did you find it more difficult or liberating to work with kind of a larger cast of characters in this novel?
It was a little bit of both. I mean, I liked not having the claustrophobia. You know, in Dead Letters, there were really just two characters, and they're very similar. In this, you know, I got to inhabit a couple different types of people, and that was fun. But it's also sometimes you feel like you're stretched a little thin. So think a little bit of both, but I think it's as a writer, it's a good idea to try both, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like, yeah, just broadening your canvas, you know, would open up all of these opportunities that would really be interesting. But I guess you're right. I mean, then you do have to tie them up and, you know, give them their own arcs and stories and all of that, which is...
And sometimes you run the risk of someone falling flat, and then that's unfair to, you know, the fourth or fifth character who you've added in. And if they don't really get a full, if they don't get to be a really fully realized character, then, you know, what are they doing there? And was that fair to them?
Right, right. Having come through these two, will you approach number three, whatever the number is you're on with all the, I think you had a novel in the drawer when we talked last time, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It's still in the drawer.
Okay,
may come out of the drawer. We'll see.
That's good. That's good. But is your approach, you know, is it just kind of you sit down and you everything is new again because it's a new book, or will you take with you something from this book to the next one that you learned?
I love starting a new book. It's kind of my favorite part of the process. So I do like to go into it just with a, hey, let's see what happens kind of mindset. But, you know, I think it's evident to me that characters kind of return to me. You know, Zelda gets a little cameo here and we went to the woods. And I think there will be continued instances of a hangover from the book before that pops up. Certain things that I just never felt like I could totally resolve in that other book, I think, will often spill over into the next book. So even if it's a totally new, fresh story, there's, I think, always a... My temptation is to want to just anchor it in the last one as a way of letting there be a through line between all the books.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
Makes me feel, I guess, safer and like a book isn't ever truly done, because it's hard to say goodbye to characters, you know?
Right, right. No, that's kind of a great idea. And then it also... kind of gives you something to hang your hat on in the next one, where you feel like you're not totally free floating in space, that you've got some little...
There's a hand to hold on to if you feel like you need it. And sometimes I do.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Any last words of advice that we didn't cover that we should have covered?
No. I mean, I feel like my only advice ever to anyone who ever asked me is just read. So
yeah.
It's not new advice. It's not revolutionary advice. It's not even interesting advice, but
it's advice that people don't listen to enough. I mean, I can't tell you how many professors.
It's the most important one. Just read everything.
Yeah. And read outside your genre. Don't read in your comfort zone.
Oh, that's what I mean. Like, specifically, read science fiction if that's not your normal jam. Read romance novels. I've just gone on like a romance novel binge, and it's very interesting and informative, even though that's not normally what I read. You know, I think it can't be overstated enough. There's so many good stories.
for sure. And tell us where we can find you online.
So I'm on Instagram. My handle is my name, @KateDolanLeach. And I have a website, also my name, www.katedolanleach.com. And Facebook, same deal, my name. Pretty easy.
Love it. Are you on any book tours anywhere out here on the West Coast at all? Or?
I'm not yet. I'm doing an event here in Iowa City at Prairie Lights on July 19th.
Okay.
But that's the only official thing scheduled at the moment.
So we're going to keep watching your website and find out where
Perfect.
You are.
Yes. Okay. I will update it because it's also sadly out of date.
I get it. Kate Dolan Leach, thank you so much for taking the time. Thanks for coming back on.
Thank you so much for having me. Again, I love the program and I love the work that you guys do.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.